from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper. You are Live from the Path.
Studios here in Johnston proper. It's lovely to be with you on this. I don't know what type of evening it is. It's probably morning when you're listening to it, and so let's not worry about the formalities.
You're saying it's lovely to be with the listener or like me?
No, I was talking about the listener.
Oh, okay.
I want to know who would listen to this in the morning. That's who wants to start their day with that?
Coming at you for your drive time.
Okay. I think that makes sense, Dan. What you're saying makes sense.
I'm just saying.
It's okay. Here's what we got going on the show this evening. First, we got a very special guest. Dirk Von Steen is in the studio. And, that was good. That was good. Way to do it, Bubba. So anyway, I ran in. We'll talk with him a little bit more about kind of his background and story. But I saw him as kind of headlining this event for the Sober Soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had those fellas in before. Bubba's doing some, hanging out with that group and doing some work over there. And so I thought natural fit. And so excited to have Dirk in. He's going to play some tunes. He's going to share about his life story. And then he's going to just participate in the general revelry that is going on in here.
Yep. Come on.
Okay. So I think that's going to be good. Also, we've got a few. Mike, what was your, can you sum up the thing you want to talk about?
I got a text from my wife this morning that asked me if I was mad at God.
Oh, yeah.
And then I realized the answer was yes.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. So we're going to have to
see
what's going on
with the wife.
That. Yeah. Okay. And then, Booba, you've got an Ask the Pastor?
Yeah, I do. I was reading in Jeremiah 26 today in regards to the priests coming at Jeremiah, being angry at him for doing some things. And then it talks about two different other prophets that have given a rough word. One is Micah, and the other is Uriah. And I had a question because we have the book of Micah that we can go back to and what that prophecy is, but we don't, at least not in my 66 books have the book of Uriah,
yep,
or the recorded prophecies of Uriah. And so I'm interested to hear, why do I not have that? Like, is that not proven to be God's word? Is there a problem there? Like, what's going on here that I don't have that in my 66 books? And should I be worried about that?
Okay. Yeah. That seems like a great question. Kind of a common question, even across, as you think about either Old Testament or New Testament mm-hmm. stuff. Like, why don't I have all this, especially if you get into these things where like the gospel of so-and-so and such-and-such,
right.
Why isn't this stuff in here?
Yeah, Philip wrote a gospel.
Yeah.
Those are the ones where they tell you that Jesus had a twin and was married.
Oh.
Yeah.
Those are the Gnostics.
I just need to know more about the
Maccabees. Know what that word means.
Gnostics?
Yeah, what's that mean? I read it sometimes, they'll be like, these are the Gnostic gospels, and I'm like, okay, that's not in my Bible, I don't care. What does it mean? Dan?
We're doing a second Ask the Pastor.
I mean, it was a philosophy. There's a really good answer that I don't have. Hmm. I mean, but it's
you know, it's Mike Shudder.
That stuff.
I mean, here's the thing, is the algorithm catches me on the news feed. I click on one, whatever, cool-looking Jesus-type article, and then the next 15 articles are like 15 things that will convince you Christianity is not real. I'm like, what the heck is this? I don't care. What are they, though? I want to know.
Right.
They're never any good.
Did you know the cynics were a group of people?
Yeah. Just real quick, like Gnosticism just believes that there's a separation between like the spiritual world and the physical world.
Yeah.
And Gnosticism tended to elevate the spiritual world, like spiritual world good, physical world bad.
Oh.
Right.
So it didn't matter what you did in the physical.
Yeah. So like Christianity says like both.
Right.
And it comes
of heaven and earth.
It's from like the Bible word we use is to know, like gnosko, and that's Gnostic gnosis. That's where it comes from.
I know I shouldn't ask.
Yeah, I don't know why you asked that.
The whole eat, drink, and be married for tomorrow or we die, you know, it's like I can be as sexually active as I want. Doesn't matter because that's not my spirit. That's my body.
Yep. Dan went right for the sex.
I do. That's where I go. You go there because.
I feel like most of the people in the first century would have done the same thing.
Me and Tom Cruise. We know how it is.
We know.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
Well, okay, Dan, have you ever been compared to being in a group with Tom Cruise before?
No, I don't think
answer
so.
Answer wisely.
There's others that would surprise you, but not, I don't believe him.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, before we ruin the show completely, let's do this. let's hear a song from Dirk so that you can this will reel you in. He's the grabber, so that we can do our poor content later. And so, Dirk, maybe just real quick, just give an introduction of like what the song that you're going to do and any kind of context they need for it, and then perform it, and then we can kind of talk more about it.
Yeah. So the song that I'm going to play first is called Living Water. This is off my new record that was released this year, and it's called Angel Road. And this one is all about kind of getting on the right track. And, you know, I'm celebrating 10 years of recovery. So there's always it's always a conversation between me and God and what God is revealing to me. And, you know, the living water that we know from a Christian perspective is definitely been proven to be a lot more potent than the alcohol and the you know, when that was the center of my life. Yeah. And you know, I guess when that living water gets inside of you, you got to follow it. And this is what this one's about. So we ready?
We're ready.
Okay. Living Water. Thanks for having me on the pod. From the downtown lies of busy streets or a landless grind. Gotta get where the green grass grows, the wind blows free, so I can unwind. Spending too much time taking wrong turns on dead end roads. Take me into that where your river of life, living water flows. Yeah. Let your living water live and flow inside of me. Eyes to see where the winding road is leading me. Gotta get back to that where the river that flows from Galilee.
Guys.
Hey, man, that song kind of smokes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You don't, you know, I think that's a real, there have been certain genres of music where it feels like people singing about Jesus just hasn't soaked through.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like, this is, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it happening. Because you're right, that song does smoke. It kind of, you know, reminds me. When Arendelle was in here playing some of them smoky numbers, he was the swampish.
Yeah. Tunes. Yeah, it's got some swamp to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty great.
How long have you had that song in the tanker?
This one I've probably been working on. I recorded it this last summer. Usually what I do when I get a new guitar, which is why I like to get new guitars, is I just pick it up and put it in a tuning that I don't know what I'm doing and what the chords even are and just start riffing on it.
Yeah.
So I think when I first started, I got my first resonator probably about 2.5 years ago. And just, I still have a couple more that are kind of from that same time, you know, where you just start, you get a riff in your head and you put it down for a while. And it's like, you want to finish something, but until it's the right time and the words come in. And that one, when the words come, I like to have the music kind of ready to go, and it fell together pretty quick after that. So
yeah, dang, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say, if you guys listen to my record on it, that's a hard one to do by myself because my brother plays drums on the record, and he just smokes on a drum solo that's so good.
Yes,
and I have a fiddle player that played on the record, and it was like I had a whole middle section that was just them just killing it, and it's
okay.
A fun
I'm pretty excited about this.
Yeah.
Now hold on, this is on an album and it's out there, like it's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. It's on Spotify. It's on YouTube. Yeah, wherever you do your stream. Yeah, so Dirk Von Steen, and the record is called Angel Road, is what this last one is, and yeah, it's fun, man. It's fun to you know, be able to start sharing this music with everybody.
Yeah. Hey, man. So go. I mean, give it a spin, sure, but like, go ahead and buy that thing. Dirk only gets like a penny or two every time you let it spin.
It's a gesture.
Yeah, but the man needs to buy new guitars so he can write new tunes.
Yeah. And in fact, you're standing in the way.
Yeah.
Your lack of an album purchase is a problem for me.
Yeah.
Fix it immediately.
It's possible that Paul was not allowed to go into Mysia because people weren't buying his tents. It's speculation on my part. I'm just saying.
That's in the Gnostic Gospels.
Okay. Hey, so speaking of which, like when you were talking about like coming back to a song, it made me think about something that you had shared about kind of your life where you had been doing – it was funny. We won't go into all the details, but like Dirk and I and Mike have met when we were in high school in like a battle of the bands.
What?
Yes. Wild.
I thought it was the Mr. Universe contest.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people from that.
Let me give that what it deserves.
Living water.
So, but anyway, so like you were doing music back then, but then there's a like a point in your life, kind of a drought of music, and related to alcoholism. Like it just sounds like it sapped your desire to make tunes, to write tunes.
Correct. And just that's the way that alcoholism worked for me and for a lot of people is we build these walls of isolation around us. And I used to play in bands out and I used to have fun, and the blues community is great in Des Moines and great people and support it. And I just got to the point that I was so scared of drinking and driving, after getting very lucky, time after time after time, that I didn't want to go drive anywhere, because I was going to drink. That was never a question. And so those walls of isolation, when you're just sitting there in your house with no passion or reason to really play or with anybody, that's part of my testimony is alcoholism took away my desire to play music. And there was a drought I put my guitar down for about 10 years.
Did you find yourself during that time like trying to write and it not being there, or you just didn't want to touch it?
I would always in my head I would miss playing a lot.
Sure.
And then you pick the guitar up and after about a half an hour it's just frustrating.
Yep.
When it's like, man, it's not what it used to be. And there was a part of, when you get into that part of your addiction that you don't think that you could ever go back to that point. Mm-hmm. And then you get the kind of depressive part that substance abuse will force on you makes you, just regret it and all. And it's like, it's almost like I would not want to pick it up because I would feel so terrible about the fact that I've
sure.
did this to myself.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was a kind of a sad reminder of, like, man.
That is so tough. And it's a unique I think it's a thing that maybe is can get overlooked about, like, what it ended up being, it's an overused word, but, like, some of the trigger points or the thing that memories that are associated with a realization that, like, to your point, that, you know, things that you've done to yourself feels like that you're out of control to shift or change, and then you're constantly kind of fighting against this image of what you could have been or what you were, and it's kind of rehashes what feels like a defeat over yeah, and over again.
Correct.
That's tough.
Yeah,
it's a tough because you like it feels like you got to muster it to yourself to get over it, and like you can't really.
Yeah, and I always tell people, you know, music and alcohol and drugs were woven together for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a common thing with a lot of people. Is that I could never it was I never could it took me a while even in recovery to really feel comfortable playing and desire to get back out and do it again because part of my identity was just there
yeah.
and I didn't feel like it was you know but yeah
yeah I, you know what's so funny it sounded maybe foreign to me at the thought that like. People felt so connected to, say, alcohol that when you take alcohol out of an equation of which it normally is in, that the situation was just so foreign
oh, yeah.
to them. And it makes me think about situations like playing music sober when you're not used to, and maybe even if you weren't like drunk at the time or something or high at the time, everyone else was. And so there's like
right.
a buffer. There's like an agreed upon thing. We're all kind of doing the same thing here. And
yeah.
so, but there was a, I was talking to a friend of mine and he, I think for health reasons and things, he's about my age and he's like, I really just, I needed to stop drinking. And so he gave up drinking and he said that some folks that he was really close to were like mad.
Yeah.
They were just like pissed at the guy for trying to give up alcohol and like stuff that they would normally do, like get out and work on vehicles together or like hang out, sit on the front porch. If he wouldn't drink, then they didn't want him there. And it's I think it makes it it's just much deeper and even more gray of a situation than just like, hey, do I drink or not drink? Because there's memories tied to it, there's social situations, the ease of which, like, how do we relate to people if it's not through alcohol or
right, yeah.
Mike's often talking about like how easy it is to make friends at the heater shop, you know, outside.
Yeah.
you're out there
you
smoking.
You want to make a quick friend. Get out of pack of smokes, go
yeah,
stand
right.
outside.
Yeah. Go to
these
the smoke
people
shack.
Will come out of the cracks of the mortar.
Right.
They're like, hey, man, I bum a smoke. And you're
yeah.
like, yeah.
What are those candles? Let's do this, buddy.
Nobody smokes anymore.
Yeah, I know. They're all
so,
vapors.
And so I say that to say, like, if you're someone who's not ever had an addiction or even just tried some of those things and you hear people talk about it, just know, like, there's more sinews to it than, like, do I choose to drink today or smoke today or do whatever the thing I was going to do today? It's deeper than that. It's more interconnected and interwoven than that. And like it's the things that it can give you. It also at some point can feels like it takes away
right.
from those
yeah.
types of things in the same manner. So
it is funny how like I remember Dan gave a sermon illustration one time about like he was talking about divorce, but he like glued two boards together. And then when you rip the two boards apart, like there were shards of it. You know, like it didn't break away clean. And When you start talking about addiction, like especially if you have not walked through it, it's so easy to start categorizing it as if it's this one easy definable thing.
Right.
But like I tell you what, like this is going to sound so stupid in relation to a lot of other addictions, right? But like I thought I loved long drives. Like I really liked driving, like for 8-10 hours, stopping at gas stations. I just loved it, right? Turns out I like smoking and driving. That's what I like doing. When I try to drive without smoking, I'm like, this sucks. I just take forever to get here. And like, I don't want to do this anymore. I always thought I was a really patient person. Like I could sit there and wait for somebody and however long it took, no problem. I'm not getting all fired up. I'll just listen to the radio and hang out. Turns out I like to just sit there and smoke. And so like when I'm not doing that, I'm like, where is everybody and what is taking so long? I am not an inherently patient person. And so like even what feels like a virtue kind of, it was like writing on the back of like this addiction thing that I just liked, like that would really, you know, would hold on to. And like this is true across whatever, pick your poison. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like
yeah.
people who are really sociable. And it turns out that the thought of going out and sitting in a room full of people, if you're not drinking, sounds like not fun. It just sounds like sitting around in a loud room where everyone is starting to act a way and you're not acting that way, and you're like, I don't know. I feel like I'm talking to like 20 different people than the people I walked in here with, and I'm the only person that's still sane.
It's always interesting to have conversations with fellas that are kind of, you know, just starting out in the recovery life. And like, you get 2 weeks in and your body is still kicking at you and fighting you and stuff, and there's still chemical stuff like kicking around, and it's rough withdrawals and everything. From that 2 week to the 30 days, you start to like feel a little bit better, and then it gets to like, it's not holding those hooks in you so much anymore. But like, when you get to that 30 days, and this isn't like the way that psychologists and psychotherapists talk about it, but like from my experience, what I've seen, you see that like 30 day hit, people start to realize that like the other hooks that were in them was the community, yeah, was the fact that they had that identity in that. And they start having this crisis of stepping back and going, oh, I don't know how to be a sober adult. Like, I don't know what my Friday nights look like now that I don't go drinking with my buddies, or I don't know what I do when I've got a day off. Cause like I get my stuff done, but like then what? Like, what do I enjoy?
Or
like,
I have
hobbies.
Right. I have money in my pocket.
Right,
I don't know what to
exactly
do with money.
Like that's the crazy thing that I see the hit where they're like, I just like, what's pulling me back now is not so much the chemical like withdrawal addiction pulling on, but it's what was ingrained in you from like a behavioral perspective and from a community perspective and identity perspective. You don't know what to be now. And I mean, that's why, you know, when I have these kind of conversations, it's pointing to Jesus, because like, you got to replace that with something. You got to replace that with some community that like, fine, you want to know what to do on a Friday night? Find a church. Find some people that are hanging out that aren't doing this stuff. Come to my place on a Friday night if you need to. I'll take you to a movie or go bowling with you. Like, we'll figure it out. But it's just crazy that you don't think about that identity crisis that you end up having when you leave that.
So what turns the corner in your life, Dirk?
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, just to kind of follow you up there is, you know, I went the route of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that's just my, it's part of my testimony, my story.
Yeah.
And we have a saying, and we were joking about this before. There's always these sayings that people say that in early recovery, you're like, whatever. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, certain people will say something and they're like, oh, you can take the alcohol away, but you're still left with the ism. You know,
yeah.
And then you start doing things like going to church, and you hear a pastor talk about, how do you know the difference between God's voice and Satan's voice? God will tell you something one time, and Satan will sit and nip at your heels all the time. And that's exactly what, you know, what that addiction did. And so, to answer your question, but you know, when I turned, by the time that I sobered up, I was ready to hit the ground running. I was ready to do whatever that's I awesome. Needed to do to change.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't know anything about recovery. I think it's a blessing. I like to look at it like that. Is I hadn't gotten an OWI. I hadn't gone to jail. I hadn't been court ordered to an AA meeting.
Right.
I hadn't gotten trouble at work. You know, at the time, I hadn't been through a divorce. You know, and so it was a part of it was like, am I an alcoholic? Or, you know, I knew that I struggled with not. I knew that I could not drink.
Yeah,
right.
You
right.
know, alcohol controlled my life.
Yeah.
It controlled my time. It controlled just how much wasted time.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
You know, I was. So I started diving into recovery.
Yep.
You know, I went to 5-6 meetings a week.
Wow.
You know, at the beginning, because I number one, I drank every day. Uh-huh. So it was like, okay, I got to do something to start working through it. Yeah. After 30 days in, you know, you start going to these rooms, and like these people that you don't even know, I'll never forget it. You know, you walk in and you're like, you look at these, you know, just because at the time I was 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'd look around and I'd see like a 70-year-old woman, Spanish woman, sitting there.
Yeah.
She was from Mexico. And so I'm like, there's nothing that this woman is going to say that I'm going to connect with.
Right.
You know, there's nothing. And all of a sudden, she opens her mouth, and within 10 seconds, it's like this the hair on the back of my neck stands up. Like, you can't get anything past this woman. She's going to call you out on it.
Yeah.
If you try to, she's going to see through it. But then all of a sudden, they kept telling you to come back, and they kept telling you things like, we're going to love you until you can love yourself.
Yeah.
Because when I came in, it took me 2 years sober to where I accepted Christ.
Yeah.
You know, and it was not because I didn't believe you when you said, you know, that Jesus is the way, the truth,
sure.
and life. Like
right.
that it was never that for me.
Right.
It was always like, that's great. And I don't know, you know, if it was just maybe a little agnostic, you know, inside of me, like, I need something else right now. Sure. I need to do something. I need some work. I need to work through some things,
yeah.
You know, before I can understand any sort of like a, you know, and I think that that's why I was happy that it wasn't defined.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I know that that's always a controversial thing in recovery.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some things, well, you know, they, you know, you have to throw Jesus out there, or they don't say Jesus, so I don't connect with that. And I say, I'm glad there's both.
Absolutely.
Because agreed. if I had not had a program that focused more on let's get sure. in and do some work to take care of what you need to do yeah. to yeah. work through this stuff,
yep.
I would not have stayed sober.
Yeah. The STEP programs are awesome in so many ways because of that structure and because of the ability to do something
yeah.
and to like make your way through a process rather than just making your way through what it feels like a book at the time.
Yeah.
Like the big book is, right? Like what we call it. And so,
correct.
Yeah. No, totally fair. Yeah.
So I got in and I dove in head first. I did everything that they told me to do because I started seeing results.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You know, I started to see the miracle happen early on, you know, where it's like, that's, you know, the first song that I wrote, talks about that, you know, that, I, you know, once I started working through, you know, you do the step work, you know, mm-hmm. you do work
yep.
where you actually make a list of your
sure.
resentments, your fears and your sexual inventory. And you start working through this
yeah.
stuff,
yep.
you know, and you actually start, you're left with what they call a character defect mm-hmm. list. You know, that's not a character defect list that God just, oh, now you've worked through this, it's gone.
Right.
No.
Right.
I look more like, okay, here's a list of things that if these things start creeping back up in my life, I'm doing something wrong.
Sure, yeah.
I need to, what is it that I can go, that's what I did. You know, when I started going through it and doing the step work was just figuring out how can I become a better person and new playgrounds, playmates. And at 2 years sober, Jesus revealed himself to me in such a beautiful way that, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
I love that, man.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that. Like one of the things that you had mentioned was it was about 8 years ago where you felt like the Holy Spirit said you need to be writing and playing music. What
yeah.
was that experience
yeah.
like?
Yeah, so we had some revival services at the time it was called Grimes United Methodist Church, and they're Prairie Creek now.
Wait a minute, just to clear, is that the church that has like the walkthrough nativity?
Yeah,
it's pretty
good.
Yeah,
we used to do that. COVID canceled that.
Oh, that's too bad.
I was a wise man. I was one of the wise
no
men.
Kidding.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I was going to say you should check it out.
You did make it as a wise man. Is that what you're saying?
A wise guy would probably be more what it would be.
Why I ought to move along. But
where were we at? Revival services. Sorry, you got me off on tangent there. So we had some revival services. We had a pastor from Canada come down, Pastor Ian, and had a couple days of revival services. And I was pretty newly into this whole going to church thing and accepted Christ a few months earlier. So I think I was in, I guess you could call it fertile ground, I guess.
Sure.
But, you know, to see what God was doing through those services, just to the church community, it was just fascinating. And, yeah, I you know, the Spirit came upon me very heavy, went to the altar, and was just weeping, you know, and just very clearly said, I need to be doing music. You know,
yeah.
That was very clear. What was not clear was the next day when I woke up and it was like, okay, now what do we do? So it became clear over time that the opportunities that came from going to church was shortly after that, I got asked to lead the youth worship band at the church, and I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never heard Chris Tomlin before.
Wow.
You know, I was pretty green, as we call it, into the trade. And so it was me, two drummers, and six singers. That was our band.
That's pretty much the makeup of Tomlin's band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
And the craziest thing, and it 10 years ago, even 10 years ago, you know, if you would have said that, you know, a little over 2 years into this sobriety journey, that all of a sudden my passion and desire to play music and purpose would come back to playing at church, I wouldn't. There's no way I would have.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
you know, no way.
Oh, I love that so much.
But yeah.
So okay. So then the journey from then to now. If I think about, we had a COVID kind of creates an interesting situation when it comes to kind of playing, you know, playing live music. And so I think in some ways, sometimes that caused people to just kind of I don't know, give it up. Some people, like the time being able to just focus on writing and putting some stuff together, I think re-energized it. Did you have any either one of those?
I did, yeah. I had both of them. I had a, there was a just ache in my heart when there wasn't any live music. Because, you know, I mean, when that whole thing started, you know, like anybody else, we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You know, there was this, there was a short period of time that, you know, there was the thought came through my head of like, is this just the way life's going to be like for, you know? And so I really started to miss playing and I wanted to get back out. And I knew that my guitar playing, you know, I had taken lessons multiple times, you know, and played guitar my whole life. And I was always a drummer in high school. And so I never was a lead singer. So I knew that I needed to get trained as a singer. So what I did during COVID is I decided, I'm like, you know what, this is, if I'm going to do this, I need to know what I'm doing singing. So
yeah, right.
I went and took some vocal lessons. Nice. And really had a great time with Shayla Cutler at Central Iowa Music Lab. It, you know, she was a classically trained vocalist, and that's how she taught, and just learned so much about how to control my voice.
Yep.
And how to project your voice. And yeah, so then I started getting out and playing live shows. It was pretty rocky at first, but got like, you know, my first 3 hours of music down and was doing some 90s pop rock and anything nice. I could get through to fill up the time. And and I played a lot of empty rooms. I played with some places with, you know, decent amount of crowd. But what I did is I found I absolutely love to do it again.
Yeah.
And that whole time I was writing music, you know, and was kind of sprinkling that in, you know, with the, and I still do that now, you know, I'll still do a lot of different cover songs as well. But yeah, so over the last 3 years, that's been my focus is getting back out and using. Even, you know, and it's funny because people always, you know, it's like, how do you like playing the gigs where there's nobody there? And I love them because those are the ones that I get. That's like a practice.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to start. This is where I'm going to work stuff out. You figure out, you know, like you figure out an act, you know, like you figure out, okay, I don't want to play. If I never have to play Brown Eyed Girl again, I'd be just fine. You know, like there was like a list of, okay, these are on the chopping block and these are, you know, and then you start filling it up. And, you know, now I'm to the point that, you know, I'm really ready in 2025 to kind of let God take the reins.
Right,
you know,
right.
And direct. So,
what if God wants you to play two princes?
You don't tell me. If God,
if you better bring a bass player.
Okay. I'm just saying. How do you tell whether the Spirit's moving you or whether you just got yourself a rough idea?
Although, if you got yourself a beatboxer to go along with two princes and an acoustic guitar, that, I'm telling you what.
You could do it.
That's a fog machine and a half.
I mean, I'm in for that whenever you want to give it a shot. I'm just saying.
Okay. All right. That might not be the Spirit.
Okay, don't do that.
So let's do this. Let's do another tune. And then I think maybe we'll catch up just a little bit on, say, how does Dirk see his 2025 shaping out? How's he thinking about it? And then we got some, Mike, we got to figure out why Mike's wife left him a voicemail and said, hey, you angry with the Lord?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, do it. So tell me a little bit about this next song you're going
to do. Yeah, so this next song is it's the title track for this next record, or the record that I released this summer. It's called Angel Road. And, you know, one of the things that I'm very blessed to get to say today is that I'm 10 years sober. And you know, along with that, where I did an event called The Road to Recovery, you know, and one of the things that I've learned in recovery is the more there's God's will and there's my will, right? And all of a sudden, you stay sober a little while, you start doing things right. You know, at first, my road, it was all over. It's pretty clear when I'm following my path, you know, but the more you kind of follow Jesus, and it, you know, those it's not as far off. So this song is just called Angel Road, and it's knowing that accepting the fact that Jesus does love me and Jesus does have a place for me in heaven. And it's called Angel Road. Hope you enjoy it. Start that over. The voice in my head's telling me I'm not good enough and I don't deserve the love that you so freely give. I need to leave the past behind. One day I will walk down that road where spread the angels, how they spread their wings, and it's lined with gold. Your words are growing in my heart, I'm trying to cultivate a faith beyond our space and time, through the noise that dive the weight. One day I will walk down that road. Where the angels are, they spread their wings, and it's lined with gold. The black night always gives in to the light. It's darkest just before the dawn on Angel Road. Stop to rest my feet or to ease my pain. It's not by force, it's not by greed, it's by grace. One day we'll walk down that road. Where the angels are, they spread their wings, and it's lined with gold. One day I will walk down that road. Where the angels are, they spread their wings, and it's lined with gold.
Hey man, that was fun to listen to.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Like I know, like I know that seems like a super simple compliment, but I mean it. Like it was just, it was fun to listen to that whole song, and there wasn't a single part where I was like, okay, like I know what's coming next, and I know what to expect, and it's formulaic and all the different stuff. Like a lot of music turns into.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed just sitting and listening to that more than I've enjoyed music in a while, to be honest. So
it's definitely not formulaic. Like you write very unique songs.
Yeah.
Like they're just, it's not something that I would expect to hear anywhere else. Like it, even the first one was this way too.
Yeah.
It's like your brain gets used to taking in like pop style music or even worship music is horrible for this. You know what I'm saying? Like just very formulaic, and like these are not the songs that you're pumping out. And so that was awesome. Very, very cool.
Yeah, agreed.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so again, you can go check out, you can go to DirkVonSteen.com. And just check it out. You can also follow him on the socials if you look for Dirk Von Steen Music on Facebook. Now, like, how widespread are you on these socials? You do the Instagram and the X and all the things?
I do the Instagram. The X I haven't quite got onto yet, but, you know, I think I could probably step up my my social media game a little bit. But Facebook makes it so easy whenever you're planning events.
Oh,
you know, to just make an event where people could follow it and see it and get the information. You can, the time, the date, the you know, they'll tell you, take you right through maps to get there and everything.
Yeah, right, right. Okay, so you can, anyway, if you want to find more on Durek and make sure you keep up with the news and all that stuff, sounds like Facebook's the weapon of choice, but certainly the website will, yes. Little dab will do you. Okay, so let's talk about just like what is the, how do you see the future? So you just did, you did a big recovery event for Sober Soldiers.
Yeah.
You had mentioned that. You got something coming up, this week is a Saturday.
This right? Saturday. Yeah. This Saturday I'll be playing at, it's just one more in Jamaica, Iowa. They invited me back to play there. So yeah, I'm right at the tail end of the live shows for this year. Cause after once December hits, we've got kids' birthday parties and the holidays uh-huh. coming up and I've tried the last couple of years to book in December and it makes for just, I'm getting running around everywhere, but I'd like for you to check out the music. And yeah, you know, one of the things we were talking before as well is 2025 is going to look a little bit different. I'm going to continue to book live shows and, to play out at different, bars and restaurants around town, you know, cause that's where a lot of people like to go see live music. But I'm also going to be kind of diving in and I guess we didn't even talk about this ahead of time, but I'm going to be actually putting together a live worship band.
Oh, nice.
Because I think there's a lot of worship leaders that, mm-hmm. You know, are incredible musicians that, you know, everybody's got their Sunday gig,
yep.
right?
Right.
And But I'm finding that there's new opportunities to lead worship in the community.
Yeah.
And different That's days awesome. Of the week. So, you know, yeah, the Sober Soldier guys looking to maybe get a couple events booked with them. Got Sheepgate Teen Challenge. We're going to work with them on getting some worship into that to their facility in Colfax. And I got some other stuff that's brewing right now.
Nice.
And letting the Spirit lead the way.
Yep.
You know, just kind of ready to kind of dive in and really let God take the reins. My wife and I, she sings as well, so I enjoy singing or having her sing with me. So I'm looking forward to some new opportunities to get to do that as well. So
that's super exciting. Like, so I'm going to be praying for Durek. And it's interesting as you were talking about like letting the Spirit lead the way on that thing. It's not dissimilar to how you think about people trying to grow any artistic career. Like you take the opportunities that come. Except for there's a lot of pressure in those arenas to try to formulate what you think it should look like and to kind of curate the things that go on to like, well, this fits me, this doesn't, whether you're an actor, whether you're a writer, whether you're a musician or whatever. And the cool thing about letting the Spirit run with stuff is that like oftentimes it doesn't match what you thought at all. It doesn't necessarily meet what you expected. And so you saw hints of that, like it's okay to play to a room of two. If it's the right to, like it's,
yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like if,
yeah.
if it's what God has you doing, and we say that to ourselves just to justify why we keep doing this show. But
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
You know, in general, it's just like if it's, it takes off some of the pressure having to curate a different version of yourself and just go, this is what I got. It's what God is using. And to be open to where that may take you, you know, before you stop playing music the first time, you never would have thought that you'd end up doing, you know, work in churches. And like, even as your stuff starts to kind of come back together, you know, being able to play to crowds who just need to be inspired and reminded that like you walked the things that they walked, like there's a lot of opportunities in that. And it may not be the way that you fashioned it 4 years ago, but like God does awesome stuff with yeah. things you never thought of. So like, what a cool way to approach it.
It is. And I think the one thing that I didn't see coming as well is just the interaction with how being able to touch people's lives. Like, yeah. I'll never forget, I was at Pally's Bar and Grill probably earlier on when I was still kind of working through my set list and not, you know, faking it till I make it. You know, I hate to say that I come across like I've made it because that is not the case whatsoever. But I was still pretty early and was not real confident. That
sure.
would probably be the better way yep. to say it. And I we were talking. I would do some 90s pop rock music, you know, because that's what that's what women that go to a bar like to listen to.
Yeah,
you gotta that's give what people I was what they told, want. You know. And there was a handful of people that were there, and there was a gal that was there, and she kind of had a look on her face like I wasn't sure if she was enjoying the music or not. To be honest with you, but she, you know, she stuck around, and at set break, she came up to me and she said, "How did you know to play It was like Wonderwall. Yeah. You know, everybody's got that guy, that buddy that plays Wonderwall.
Sure. Huh? Yep.
And a couple other ones. And she said, how did you know to play those songs? And I said, I play a lot of country music, Chris Stapleton to 70s classic rock, you know, stuff all over the place.
Yep.
And she said that, I'll never forget it. She walked up and she had tears in her eyes and she said, I buried my best friend this morning.
Oh, gosh.
And a year ago, she was diagnosed with a rare disorder. I don't remember what she had. And she said, I was holding her son as they were burying, you know, his 5-year-old son she's burying her in the ground. And she's just like, it was a horrible day.
Yeah.
And she's like, I just didn't want to go home yet. And she's like, I just wanted to come out. And when you played those songs, those were her 3 favorite songs.
Oh, man.
How did you know to do that? And I said, that's God working right there.
Yeah.
And we hugged, and she left, and it was just like, wow, that's, I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Nobody thinks you can worship with Oasis. That's awesome.
That Wonderwall.
Especially Oasis.
Still got it. Wonderwall.
Right, especially
still got
Oasis.
It.
They're like, no, it's not worship music. You stop that right now.
They'll be so mad they found out God used them.
Like, if you're going to play for God, do Champagne Supernova. Oh, wow. That's super cool, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, so thank you so much for sharing tunes. I think Dirk's going to do one more kind of once we get toward this is how we keep you. We keep you by telling you that Dirk's going to provide more ice cream at the end of the show here. And so so big thank you to Dirk so far for sharing your story. He's going to hang around, too. So if you hear him, he's going to be chiming in on the conversation as he sees fit. All right, Mike, tell me about this. Your wife says you might be mad at the Lord, and you said, I think I am.
It's hot in here, fellas.
This isn't the start of like a Nelly thing, is it?
Ew. No. I hate that.
Oh. A little bit.
Hey, Dirk started it.
Okay, so anyway, my wife sent me a text this morning. And she asked very plainly, like, are you mad at God? And I'm like, because, like, it's not been, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, 6 days, almost a week. I don't know, probably less than that. But God's been very generous to me in allowing me fences to, you know, be in my Bible every day. And I'm in a Bible study with somebody that requires like a daily reading and some prayer time, and then a separate, you know, just Bible reading on my own, and like a drive of which I, you know, can pray or listen to my thing. And like, and God has been just very generous in helping me get into a rhythm with all that stuff. And for some reason, like, I don't know, last Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever, like, I just started taking inventory of all the things around me, and I'm like, you know what? Like this, I think what finally broke the camel's back is I was talking to somebody and they're like, you know, I'm just having a hard time believing God even exists. And I'm like, you know what? I can't take any more of this. You know, like literally, like people like have been shown his glory and the difference that he makes in the lives of them and the people around them. And a completely ungenerous heart, which is the one I had at the time, is like, I can't take any more of this arrogant approach to denying God's existence. I'm just done. I'm done listening to this. And a lot of it, like this is just going to have to be me admitting some things. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is me lumping a lot of things together and seeing a lot of God's promises yet to come true.
Yeah.
Things that God is good and faithful for, where his character precedes his glory. Until like you're patiently waiting on earth for God to redeem a thing. And I think I was just one more not yet away from being done. Not with my relationship with God or anything.
Sure, right.
But like just, I just was not. And so like last Wednesday shows up or whatever, I have my Bible study and I have to admit to the person I'm like, look, I didn't read it today. I can't, you know, I don't have a ton to talk about. How was your week or whatever? And then Thursday I skipped it. And Friday I didn't go pray up at a bench that I pray at every day.
Yep.
Every day I pray at a bench. And Friday I'm like, I just don't want to. Do I really have to do this every day? You know?
Sure.
And then Saturday comes, same story. Sunday comes along and I go to a church that I don't normally go to. And I'm like, you know what? My relationship with God has been feeling a bit funky. Maybe getting out of my normals and going to have a big worship, you know, and like listening to someone else preach. And I'm like, this will, and I went by myself. My whole family was sick, so I was by myself.
Yep.
And I'm like, this will be great. And it was good, but it wasn't the thing, you know? And so, and I told my wife about it. I'm like, because God had been, he had been specific about one thing, and there was an addiction that he wanted gone. And it's a level of whatever. It's smoking again, fellas. Here it is. It's smoking.
Yep.
Okay, so anyway, he wanted it out. And for some reason, don't tell me why I think, like, it's not an audible voice. But basically, I feel like God was basically saying to me, we don't have anything to talk about until you are ready to be obedient to the thing I've asked you to do.
Because this isn't the first time
It's not the first time
spoken was very clear the last time this came
out. Very clear. And he's always been that way. Like, been that way. It's not that it's the smoking that's the thing. It's flat-out disobedience.
Yeah.
And so, and his heart is never feels jerky about it. It's always like, Michael, I want to use you to join me in these things, but if you're not going to join me, you know what I'm saying? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, I did it. I'm like, okay, that's it. Fine, you're right. It's out. And this was all last week or whatever. And I was still feeling the same. Still feeling the same. You know, and then finally I was telling my wife, I'm like, you know, she was praying and like she's still doing her Bible study and still writing in her journal and still spending time with God. And she's like, you know, God really, I think, is leading me to look at this thing this way. And now I'm even more kind of irritated because I'm like, I quit the smoking like you asked me to, and there's nothing but not yet's. It's not yet's, and then you take my thing away that I love that makes me a patient, loving person who likes to do long drives, and so all of a sudden that's gone.
It's the thing that, you know, it's funny, though, is that it's the thing that takes the edge off the not yet's.
Yes, for sure.
I very much, just so we don't pass it too quickly, I very much sympathize with that. Like, when you are following Jesus's footsteps into crowds of mess and disobedience and difficulty, the places where the gospel is needed the most, you're going to look around and you're going to be surrounded by what you know to be God's good promises and the realization that a lot of them are not yet's. And there is a weight that can come with those things because it's tough to watch. It's tough to watch things crumble in front of you. It's tough to watch people who you love, people who you have hopes for, continue to pile stuff on their own head, to live the weight of those things, to make choices that otherwise harm themselves or harm other people. And like, there is a very, even though you very much trust in the promises of God, there is a human weight to watch human suffering.
Yes.
And so I think that is very human and relatable to not be able to at any given time, you know, continue to carry what feels like the pressure of believing in God's goodness and recognizing that they have not yet come to pass and trusting in that, but still having to live in the moment of which they weigh.
I think those were all the things.
Okay.
Honestly,
yeah.
I think they were all the things.
Okay. And you kind of said that, but like, I just, like, that's super relatable. And I think it's very human. And anyway, I just wanted to call that out.
So, I voiced my frustration a little bit with my wife. I'm like, well, at least he's talking to somebody in this house. You know what I'm saying? I'm half irritated. And I know that I'm being disobedient, not even in the smoking thing, right? Like, I was being disobedient. I wasn't I couldn't even get myself to, like, actually have a decent prayer, like to just talk to him. I'm like, I just don't want to. I just flat out don't want to. I gave you the smoking, you know what I'm saying? And we're like 5 days in. I've not championed this thing. I haven't kicked it to the curb and not let it own my life at all. We're 5 days in obedience. And I'm like, Lord, reveal to me the secrets of the universe. This is all complete arrogance on my part, right? So it's not lost on me that I am the problem, right? So anyway, but I did not realize it to the extent until my wife texted me this morning. And she said, are you mad at God? And I'm like, why would I be? Yeah, I think I am. I think I am. I think that I'm, I feel like I'm surrounded by not yets. And the problem is, I am a central part to the not yets. Almost like a lot of things that I, like, that where it is either my responsibility to bring the gospel into that situation or to be the light in a darkness situation. What feels like I was the guy that God said, join me in this thing. Those are all the not yets. And so, like, I think that I'm like, I know I'm the problem. I know he's not the problem. I know if there is a problem, it's definitely me. But I think the ultimate thing is God's like, there is no problem. You're just in the not yets.
Right.
That's a thing. But like, that's not how I was seeing it. It wasn't from a maturity way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm trying this phrase out because it immediately popped in my head, is that you are not the person, even in all those situations, you're not the person who makes the difference. You're the person who knows the difference. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like as opposed to the person whose responsibility is to carry the weight of changing all the bits of darkness, that would be the person who makes the difference. I think, like, it's very, very possible that in any given, or even all these situations, like, it's God's to do. It's the Holy Spirit's to do. You're the person who is there to not make the difference, but you do know the difference. And so you can recognize when thing is moving in God's direction and where people are not, and to be able to facilitate prayer for those things and to step into situations that obviously need it. But, like, it's a responsibility-carrying issue. Frustrated because, like, if, hey, I'm doing all these things, why isn't it changing? It had nothing to do with the things that you're doing. Like, it's not your responsibility anyway to make the difference. It just is responsibility to know the difference. I don't know. I'm just testing it out. It's the thing that popped into my mind.
I think that's true. I think that's definitely true. Well, like, in a right humility and, like, understanding, like, who we are in the equation. Like, we talked about this a little bit last week, right? Like, it is so much a gift that when God invites you to be part of something and allows you to see it happen.
Yeah.
But, like, the center, the part where you're the center part of that story is the fact that God loves you centrally and wanted you to walk through that with him.
Yeah.
Not that your bold actions or keen intelligence or suave way of speaking was the mover, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so, like, once again, I think overall, I would not have realized how my seesaw had bordered on arrogance, how my seesaw had gotten out of whack, where I was basically lumping all of the not yets together as if that was my whole world, missing out on the fact that I have a loving wife that loves Jesus, that is still walking through this with me. That is a blessing,
yeah,
a huge blessing.
Yep.
Like, it colors my every day. That relationship covers my every minute that God has given me that person, right? That the person I'm doing a Bible study with just met Jesus 6 months ago, and I got to be the one to talk to her about it, and baptize this girl, and, like, it's a huge blessing. I've pushed these off to the side as if that is small and not a thing, because I was focusing on the not yets. And so the truth of the matter was, when she asked that question, I realized that yes, I am mad at God. Wrongfully, but still, that was the truth. That was my posture.
Yeah.
But I think overall, the reason I wanted to talk about it is this has not been the first time I've been mad at God, right? Like,
sure.
There's cycles. It happens, you know? But find me when I was 22 and I'd be mad at him for a year.
Right.
Or because the thing didn't go my way, you know? Or and then fast forward another 5 years and I'm mad at him for like 6 months and then 2 months. And then, you know, was it a blessing to look 5 days down the road and go, I've been separated from God for 5 days for all the same reasons I'm normally separated from God. But this time I got to see it in 5 days and not a year and not 6 months.
It's huge.
And you know what I'm saying? Like, so, like, even in the way that I've been seeing it incorrectly, kind of loving dad brings you back like this.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That goes, Mike, come on. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you're a big deal. You gave up the smokes. Not the point. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, I guess maybe at this point that I'm thankful that I have a loving wife that's willing to ask me that question, because, like, obviously, like, I mean, we're on a podcast talking about Jesus here every Monday. I show up at I teach a youth group. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have things that my life is centered around as if Jesus works all the time in my heart. And, like, not very many people would ask me that question. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
But my wife certainly would, because she loves me and she loves him more. And so
awesome.
The fact that like, I maybe the broad stroke is, like, it's your heart's going to do this every once in a while. We're kind of broken people. It happens. but to realize that he didn't move. And the way you feel about him doesn't change who he is one iota. He just is.
Yeah.
And he's the same God he's always been.
I actually think that this is you're most prone to this. Like, if this is not happening to you, you may not actually be engaging in the difficulties of the world of which the gospel is keenly used to address. Like, there is a perfection out there, I'm sure. But, like, generally speaking, when you look around and you start interacting with the harmfulness of that's going on, like the poisoning of minds, the people who aren't eating that should have, like just the fallenness of the world around you, there's like a normal thing to go back to God and like, are you sure the balance of like where your grace and justice is hitting right now? Are you sure this is right? Because this is hard to watch. This is hard to be part of. This is hard to see my own fallibilities reflected in the lives of which I'm interacting with. And so like, I actually think it is at least momentarily somewhat normal to have an earthly frustration with like, I don't know, of the not yets.
Yeah.
That immediately like call, like, I don't think God's like got quibbling so much with the, like the same thing that the prophets are quibbling about. God, how long, how much, why do you persist in these things? Like, why do you allow these things to go on? Like, these are the same things the prophets of God are asking.
Yeah.
And so that part's completely normal. It's like, it's not the necessarily the recovery time, but like those things prompt where they prompt you to reorient and thank God for what he is and who he is. And so that you can see the situation rightly, then right. It's healthy where it persists, where it starts to separate you. That's where it becomes like unhealthy. And that's where anger comes in. 'Cause like no one goes, I was angry for half a second. Anger generally is rendered because it's stuck.
Yeah.
It lingers.
You grab a hold of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you hold hands with it and you spend time together.
Yeah. I only say that though, because, like, I don't know, like, if it's not occurring to you that you're not, these things don't actually even hit you for a brief second, I mean, it's possible that you're not elbows and eyebrows and hands and feet in the situation of which you should be like, boy, there's just all kinds of worldly injustice, Lord. Are you sure? I feel like it's healthy.
Yeah. Because here's the, like, I think where it comes to head too is like, I can even believe God's promises are good, right? And I can lose hope in a humanity to choose it.
Oh, totally. Oh,
absolutely, yes.
Yeah, easily, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so, like, does that put my heart in any different of a space?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I can be comfortable that God is good, and every promise he's ever made is true and right and full of mercy and grace, just waiting for his kids to turn. And then I have to watch person after person not do it.
Right.
And I'm like, God, can you make them? Why won't you make them? Why won't you make them do this?
There's a heartache.
Because he's like, because I won't, and I'll show you why. If you just walk with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And lack of hope is just like, is never progressive. Like right. It just doesn't, if it doesn't do anything for you, it's not a practical good. It's not a relational good. And like, think of all, like, just, I look at all various parts of our lives. Like, I could look at every guy in this room and go, there's a point in your life where someone could have looked at you and go, whatever hope I had for that person's future is not good.
Oh, totally.
Some are different levels. Dan was a patch stealer. So, but like,
boy, that's going back, like, ways.
I don't know why I feel like Dan and I were just put on opposite sides of that spectrum. Just being real honest about this, I know it wasn't expressly stated, but it felt like it.
I'm just saying, there's different licks of the ice cream cone here.
Dan took some Hubba Bubba one time, and then there's Boova.
Boova had a Law and Order episode written about him.
But you know, like just thinking of, there has to be people who looked at you, something.
Sure.
Going on
absolutely.
In your life and go, whatever, there's not really hope for that being a different life for that guy.
Oh, yeah.
And like, that was the hope that, like, and then I look around the room and go, look at Dirk's life over the last decade. Look at Dan's life. Look at Boova's life now compared to even 5 years ago,
yeah,
or something.
Oh, absolutely,
like,
yes.
That.
Totally different.
Like, look at all the things that God has you doing coming from some of the stuff that you and I've been involved in growing up. And you're like, who are we to take hope away from a scenario?
Absolutely.
And what would it have done if you would have rightly rendered it? Nothing. What if for you to be wrong is glory? So why don't we just choose, you know what I'm saying? And so like, it's not even a practical good to be pessimistic and not hopeful in people's lives. And frankly, I say that because there's a practical good in just being optimistic.
Yes.
You approach people differently.
Absolutely.
There's some people where I don't want to even answer. Like, I've lost hope a lot of times. And when they call, I'm like, goodness me. I don't even want to pick this thing up anymore because I'm not hopeful about their life, and there's no practical good with it. And frankly, the way that I answer the phone, the way that I think about them, the way that I pray for them is way different when I'm thinking like positive or optimistically about what the gospel does in their life versus someone who goes, look, this guy's just chosen to give God the middle finger. Well, I mean, a lot of people have.
Sure.
And sometimes that middle finger transitions to five on each hand and glory in the middle. And so, like, what are we doing? Who am I to take that away from them? But it's hard. The weight of people's arrogance or rejection of Jesus, or like the practical good where you're like, hey, God's got me saying a thing, and then they completely reject it, and you're like, it feels it's hard.
Yeah.
If it was your own steam to keep up the energy, exactly. It's not. But like, if it's God's thing to move, and he is to be trusted, then the conversation and the weight of it is different. But like, it is a constant reminder. That's why we have scriptures that are so long.
Right.
They're constantly saying, like, praise him for who he is. He is the creator God. Like, you know, I mean, those aren't just like, oh, things that we say. They're reminders, exactly, because right. We need reminded.
Yes, we got short memories.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely, like, that's sort of just about to say from the perspective of, like, being in my scriptures, the change for me has been, rather than reading a book of history to go, oh, this is a far-off God that, like, I'm learning about, and it's super cool that I'm learning the places he was at and all the people he interacted with and stuff like that, but, like, if I take that back and go, how is this me being able to see the identity of my Father and seeing the way that he is working within me now or around me now, and I'm reminded or shown that he's been doing that since the beginning of time, the dawn of creation. Like, yep. This is the same God that is the God of long promises and of faithful men and women that were instructed to wait upon him. They were to wait upon him for his timing. There are plenty, I mean, Hebrews 11 is literally a study in how many people, like, did not see their promises come about, but, like, they still waited on the Lord through their entire lives for that, and they are counted to be heroes of faith because of the fact that they may not have seen it come to pass, but they trusted that God was going to do it, and he did.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So, yeah, I think some things to take away, Mike, from your story is, one, like, it's good to be the person who asks the thing.
Yeah.
The straight thing. I mean, be listening to Jesus about it, but, like, sometimes you need it rendered to you in a very direct way. Because we can even sometimes skirt around issues with God or not have the language for it that sometimes God provides somebody else. I think there's a lot to be spoken, though, Mike, of your transparency there. Mm-hmm. Like, the self-assessment that goes in, hey, man, am I sure I'm not blocking God's, like, what the things that God's doing in my life, because either, like, there's choices that I'm making, my attitude towards it, and being able to get to it. I think that refinement is the work of the Spirit in your life.
Yep.
Well, where sometimes, like, people just don't catch it. They're like, why, oh Lord, are these things not happening? And then after they, you know, bought a pipe and a porn and went on there with their day.
A pipe and a porn.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go buy a pipe and a porn.
Let me hit up the corner store for a pipe and a porn.
What's
gross?
What's a porn?
Old magazine that's in the back that they put behind the auto trader so that none of the kids can see it.
Look, dude, we'll sell you the pipe, but I mean,
I'm sorry. Do you have a porn? Is this your first time, friend?
What's the interwebs?
Get out of my corner store.
The problem is that modern sinful behavior is very much harder to pin down. I ended up saying a porn because what I had in my mind was a pornographic magazine, which seemed also very 1960s.
I would like a corn cob pipe and a hustler, please. Sweet Moses, man. A pipe and a porn. That was the worst thing ever. We were doing good for like 10 straight minutes. So then Ben comes in. Oh, yeah, a pipe and a porn.
This is like a value meal at Sin Is Us.
I'll have the number three, please.
Can we just appreciate that that was not me who said that?
That's true. Agreed. We've been doing this for 15 years, and Dan's had plenty of pipes and porns that he said. This time it's old Ben coming
That's my fault. I've been under the weather.
Oh, boy.
I'm acting very Dan today.
It's a good day.
Okay. All right, Boovy, you've got you got a question on Ask the Pastor.
Do we even have the time for it? Are we good?
Yeah, we can do it. I think this is quickly answered.
Oh, well, no. Hey,
dummy.
I was going to say, did that feel like a dig to anybody else? I'm like, hey, I have a question for my pastors. Yeah, it's a real stupid one. Yeah. I'm going to answer real quick.
Only an idiot would answer something like this.
Yeah, sure. The book is called Yesher, no hard J's. All right, so reading in Jeremiah 26 today, there's mention of the prophecy from the prophet Micah, and we have that book that's recorded. We've got those prophecies recorded. But then later on in Jeremiah 26, into, I believe, verse 21. Nope, 19. You start to get this. Verse 20 says, there was another man who prophesied in the name of the Lord, Uriah, the son of Shemaiah, from Kiriath-Yearim. He prophesied against city and against this land in words like those of Jeremiah. And yep. So I was interested because, so obviously there are people here, there are Jews in the situation that are saying that, like, we know of this prophecy. But that is not a prophecy, as far as I know, unless it's, like, tucked away in, like, a Chronicles or a Kings and I don't remember it, right? That, like, there's a prophet of the Lord that we don't have as recorded as a part of our larger Bible that we would call the 66 books of the New and Old Testament. And so I'm interested. I've heard the answers. I've probably given the answers, but more as a regurgitation of something I've heard than an understanding on my own part of why it is that I can say with conviction that I know that this is the breathed out word of the Lord in the 66 books that I study, and not within some of the other books that are mentioned, even within the books that we have. And so where's my confidence coming from that I'm not worried that I don't have the prophecies of Uriah to read?
Well, I think the most direct answer is, like, well, you kind of do, right? Okay. So like you have, like, for the things that gives you a perception that there's something else out there,
sure,
it's largely telling you that, like, the contents of whatever it is largely present. Now, so the places where it's not is like, what if you get into the Kings and Chronicles where, like, hey, don't you know that you could read
right.
the rest this of this
is,
in the
Yeah,
blah,
this
blah,
is
blah.
Recorded in the books of the wars and stuff like that. Right?
Hey, by the way, is that just a Hebrew way of saying that? Because it sounds real sassy.
Yeah. And have you not also read within the book yeah. of the Kings of the Chronicles?
Have you not looked in the annals of Israel history?
Right.
The
no,
book
idiot.
Of wars?
Right.
I'd appreciate it if you say annals.
Let's no.
Say, let's say annals today.
I'll take it to number four.
I hate this restaurant we're starting.
So it rolls up into a larger question. It's like, how do I know I got everything that we're supposed
yeah,
to have?
Right.
How do I trust that this is either a full representation, or what is often the thing is like, hey, how do I know that people didn't keep some things
yes.
from this stuff?
Right.
And so I say it's a quick answer, but it doesn't mean that it's a direct one. The quick answer is that, like, there is a faith here.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
Like, there's a trust in God that the same Holy Spirit that has inspired the scriptures has inspired its collection.
Yeah. And I think that's the answer I've given before.
Yes.
To be honest.
Yeah.
And
that is the reality. Now it is, like, as you dig deeper into those types of things, the question is, like, what types of stuff might you be missing? And, like, mm-hmm. it tends to show up most in kind of these pseudepigraphic stuff in the New Testament where, like, tell me about, it's the gospel of so-and-so, or the gospel of, or the Acts of Barnabas.
Yes,
or,
right. Gospel,
you know,
of Philip.
Yeah, those types of things. And so there's this broad view of, like, hey, didn't a bunch of, like, old white fellas get together in a room in, like, the third century and, like, choose the books?
Right.
Here's what's in, what's out.
Right.
I mean, the answer is yeah, but not in the way that you're thinking,
yeah,
right? And so,
based off manuscripts that we were able to,
yeah, could they verify the authorship?
Right, exactly,
and
yes,
you know, yeah. it's
was there actually like a degree
and,
of closeness between this person that's writing this and actually Jesus of Nazareth?
Yeah.
And all
yes,
that?
That's right. It's more of like an yeah. affirmation. I will also, just to clarify, in case this goes too far on the old TikTok, like, these weren't white dudes. Like, these were
no.
still like olive skinned fellas.
Yeah,
and so whatever thing you got in your mind of these predominantly, you know, Eurocentric dudes.
That is what they think. It's a bunch of George
right.
Washingtons all together
yeah.
in a room.
Yeah.
George, Patrick, what are we going to tell people Jesus said?
Yeah, for the same reason Jesus also was not a white man, neither were these fellas
right.
in the same area of the world doing the same type
just
of thing.
Just a few centuries later.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Dan.
Oh, sorry. I say at the same time, God speaks in a lot of ways to a lot of people at different times. And
yeah.
you look at the New Testament, and there were people with the gift of prophecy. Like, there was no New Testament yet. It was
right.
in the process of being written. And so God was still speaking to his people in many
yeah.
ways through prophets. And as apostles started writing things down, and they started kind of being able to verify,
sure.
you know, okay, this is from Paul, this
yep.
one, you know, is from Timothy. Not from Timothy. But there were still prophets out there prophesying,
oh, yes.
you know, in little bug tussle Jerusalem,
sure.
you know,
yep,
suburb
right.
of Jerusalem, whatever. Like Ben said, you trust the process, you trust how God brought it together, you trust that he was able to
sure.
make sure we know what he wanted us to know, and
Right, because like this is his this is his connect. Well, it's the living word of God, right? That we can trust that we are to see the identity of our Father and Yahweh of the people of Israel. That like right, like I believe that, and I have a trust in that as well. Yeah. I that does make sense. Nothing, none of that changed anything that I thought. I wanted to hear the breakdown of that to make certain that I was not missing anything.
Sure.
As I get asked this quite a lot more often than I ever thought I would, if I'm being honest about that.
Well, and so I will say is like, but the answer that, hey, the Spirit who wrote it is also helped to codify it.
Yeah.
That you don't have a problem with. You don't have a problem with it because you've seen the Spirit work.
Yes, exactly right.
This is trustworthy.
Yep. You have a personal relationship with that. Right.
For folks who don't have it, you're like, well, couldn't people have manipulated it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, it would have been possible if I did not trust that the Spirit made sure that it was the case. Now, you know, we'll say from the Old Testament perspective, we see this pretty consistently as they start to find things. Like, they're seeing not only consistent books, but we're seeing consistent language.
Yeah.
Like, this is why the Dead Sea Scrolls were so important.
Right.
We get an affirmation not only of the text itself, like that matches, and then some of the translations from the Masoretic text and stuff. Even when the New Testament starts to split and kind of go eastish, westish, like even a lot of that stuff still matches up as they start to compare things. And so, like, again, I would say, and this is verifiable, plenty of books that go out and do this, but like, these texts are reliable. They're far more reliable than a lot of the things that we are not questioning, like the works of Aristotle and Plato and like. These things where, you know, your extant copy is not as robust and it's not near as recent. Like a lot of the works that we rely on from Cicero or whatever, like we're finding things that are 300, 400 years latent from when they were written. The New Testament, like people are validating. You've got copies of the thing within 50, 60 years.
Sure.
You've got people who are writing other works who are quoting from those works within 30 years.
Yep.
And so like, it is the most, the New Testament specifically is like the most robust and affirmed historical document than anything else you're holding on to from that time frame or even within like 500 years after. And so it's a right question, but like the history is on its side, the documentation and the robustness of it is on its side. And then frankly, the persistence of how it's been used over time frame through translations and stuff, like it's stock solid. It's difficult to not have to like to question or not have to deal with the historicity of the New Testament,
right?
And then to call everything else that founds our modern society into question.
Yep, yeah. I think the biggest one I've run into recently is the Book of Enoch. Like so many people want to read the Book of Enoch and talk about that lately.
Yeah.
Like it's weird how many people in the last 3 months have popped out of the woodwork. Like, hey man, you heard about the dragons and Enoch and all this stuff about the Anunnaki and all that. I'm like, what? What is going on?
Yeah.
Or Nephilim, not Anunnaki.
I would just
me,
go like, how's the Sermon on the Mount treating you? And then
we'll
come back.
You been to Matthew 5-7 recently?
Like Enoch is interesting for sure.
Sure, yeah.
But like, I mean, I'm not sure we've nailed all the other stuff that are in our fingertips here. And so even if it was in the canon, like maybe don't spend all your time on it. How we doing the feed the poor thing and the naked stuff.
Yeah, that's true. The same situation is why I don't spend a bunch of time in Job 1-2.
Yeah.
Like I don't spend an insane amount of time in like, wait, Satan was able to just go to and fro and then show up to the heavenly host in the courts and just be like, that one. Let's talk about your son here. And I'm like, what is going on with my life? So,
I think we've talked about this before, but like the things that tend to interest you the most are the things of which God is probably the least interested in right now in your life. And so, you know, make sure you feel good about other things before you start diving into that stuff.
But I'm scared of dragons.
Right.
Okay, cool.
You're listening live from the Path. Hey, if you got any feedback for us on the show, maybe you haven't asked the pastor, or you've got a better answer to something we've provided, or you think Dirk is great and you just want to make sure that somebody knows, hit us up on the old Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085. Call or text. That's the Bob Eisenhower Live from the Path complaint line, 515-517-0085, and that's call or text. And you can just, again, I know it says the complaint line because that's the most logical use for it given the context and how the show goes. But again, if you love Dirk, like you can say, we love Dirk, and write it on your knuckles and take a picture and send it in, and that's fine. Will that fit on your knuckles?
Knuckles? What?
We love Dirk. Oh, yeah, totally. That'll work.
What?
Okay.
You're supposed to put one letter per knuckle. You ape?
Yeah. Two hands. We love Dirk. Okay. Like love, hate.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a heart, yeah.
Yeah, see? It's happened before. Dirk knows how it goes. Okay, let's give some advice, and then we're going to do a tune from Dirk and call it a day.
Okay, ready? You're live from the Path. A month ago, my 7-year-old son was struck by a vehicle while riding his bike in a crosswalk.
Oh.
He's fine now. Huh. His injuries were minor, although it was frightening. Police and paramedics responded quickly, and I took my son to the hospital to have him fully checked. Later that day, a police officer came by our house with a new bike for our son, purchased by the driver of the vehicle. He gave us a paper with the driver's insurance information and said something to the effect of, "Her address is on there too, if you want to thank her for the new bike. That was really nice of them." I was shocked that he would say that. I guess it was a nice gesture, but she hit my son with a car. The driver admitted to having been distracted. At the scene, she said she thought she hit a dog. I could go on, but suffice it to say the driver was 100% at fault. I put the new bike away in the garage. My son saw it there and wanted to ride it. I held out until our insurance claim was accepted, and we went for a ride today. The new bike is not as good as his old one, but he was excited about it because it was of a different color. I'm so grateful that he's doing well and isn't afraid of biking again. My question is, do I have to write that thank you note? If so, can you please give me some words?
Okay. All right, Dirk. We're going to let you kick off the advice here. What do you write that note, or what do you think?
That's, yeah, it's conflicting there, isn't it? Because, yeah, one way or the other, I guess. So did she did say that the insurance claim did go through?
Yeah.
That was.
She didn't say whether she won it or not.
But she did say it just went through.
You just say it went through. There's a couple things not adding up here.
Well, yeah, to me, the number one thing, it sounds like that her son is okay.
Yes,
right,
yeah, right.
So I think that knowing that her son is okay, I think that was, at least they decided to do something, so.
That's more than others would have.
Yeah.
You notice that the police nor the paramedics took the kid to the hospital. She took the kid to the hospital.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
The ambulance drove all the way out there and went, eh.
He's right.
Good.
Those guys won't let you do anything without putting a neck brace on you, at least sitting in a gurney.
Okay, so you think the mom is suspicious?
I'm just overreacting to her.
Let's
just listen how this particular violin plays. The cop shows up then, an hour or two later, with a new bike and says, "This was a really nice gesture of them." So now the police and the paramedics are on a conspiracy against you of trying to frame as if.
Not only did you not take Jimmy to the hospital, you're on the side of the assaulter.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't seem odd that the paramedics wouldn't have at least taken. They take everybody in. And then the police show up as part of a liaison of like an outreach program. And be like, "That was super nice of them. Here's the insurance information.
Yeah.
You know, you can write them a thank you if you want."
Yeah, they're getting paid to take your kid in. It would make sense for them to be like, "Yeah, hop in the ambulance."
So you think, as opposed to this woman's representing that, like, most parties are being insensitive, an alternative explanation would be that she's significantly overreacting.
Yeah, yes. I think her son ran into another vehicle with a bike. Like, when the deer run into you, that's what I think happened.
Yeah. Oh.
Or at what point, I mean, as a parent, I taught my children, I don't care if there's a crosswalk or not. If there's a car coming, it's bigger than you.
Yeah.
So you know what? It's going to win. So you don't just go into a crosswalk because you can.
Yes.
I don't go on the bike trails that are painted 2 inches away from the street, and I'm thinking those are stupid because a car is going to run. You know, some dude's looking at his phone or something.
Yeah.
He's going to run me over, and I'm going to say, "Yeah, but that was my lane." It's like, "Yeah, but I'm still dead." So, you know, that. Part of that's on you, you know.
Right.
Use your brain.
I kind of agree.
I'm realizing my parents didn't love me. No. I don't remember that conversation of like, "Troy, now these cars are bigger than you, and so you better not be out there."
I don't care what the law says. I don't care what the sign says.
I think you'll be fine.
People run stop signs. People run red lights. You never go into traffic because when there's a car coming, unless you know they're going to stop, you make eye contact. Yeah. You understand they're stopping.
Be defensive in the world so you can't get offended.
Because they always say that. They're like, pedestrians have the right of way. Yeah, once.
Until they're dead. right?
Yeah. They get one shot at that.
But I was right.
I was right.
Put that
That's
on my tombstone.
Right of way.
Guess you misjudged that one, Greg.
Showed you.
Okay. So let's take a couple tranches here. What is your advice to this woman if you believe that she's overreacting? And does it change if she's not overreacting at all and the situation is just as she explained it?
Dirk has to answer first.
Dirk, I think, did you say, what do you think, yes, write the note?
I think that there was initially obviously a lot of emotion involved there. As long as the kid is okay, and what are the police really supposed to do? If the child's okay, you know, I guess the other part of the, as my skeptical brain is sitting here thinking, do you think that the person that ran in that owned the car actually got the bought the bike for the kid, or was this the cops just brought something as a nice gift?
Yeah, that's true.
They took it out of their stolen inventory.
Yeah.
I also don't love that it's not nearly as nice as the other one, but little Timmy's just excited because it's a different color.
That's where I was going with it. I don't know if anything's gonna replace that bike.
That is the most damning piece of it to me is the fact that she's like, it's not nearly as nice as his old bike was, and I held out, and he was excited about it, but like held out until we got that insurance claim back. Now we're out. Right, I don't understand this piece. I would say you are not obligated to this human being. You are not obligated to write this note. You don't have to write it. I don't think you're going to be a discourteous person if you don't write it. It's whatever. The cop is making a gesture because they've seen a lot of stupid crap happen, and they've seen lots of stories that don't end like this. Mm-hmm. And so they're very jaded to the world, and so that may have been the first story that month where the person did a nice human thing of, like, replacing the bike. And so they're like, wow, this person didn't actually murder someone, and I just dealt with this person down the street. I'm excited to see humanity is still alive. You should write a note. That'd be nice. Whatever. Don't write it. Write it. It's fine. I think you need to take a step back and recognize what you care about in this situation. Because, like, yeah, you were probably upset because your child was hit by a car. Regardless of if they should have been in the road or shouldn't have been, I understand that. You're a human being and a parent. But, like, if it's been weeks and you're still fuming mad about this situation and holding on to these, like, super, like, I don't know, shallow thoughts about the situation, I think you need to take a step back and wonder why you're so angry about everything in your life, because I doubt this is the only thing.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that this kid pulled out in front of her.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know what I'm saying? And, like, can you imagine if you were the person that hit a 7-year-old on a bike? Yeah. Like, you'd feel terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible. And so, like, you're just like, what can I do? Right? I'll pay the insurance money. Like, we'll get the kid a bike. Like, this sucks. What a terrible day for this kid.
Right. Because even if they're not hurt, they're traumatized.
Yeah, it's a mess, you know? And so, let's say, you know, you take the mustache twisting out of the driver and just be like, this kid, you've seen kids, they just bomb right onto the road, you know? And so, like, the whole thing smells a little funny to me.
Agreed.
Just not quite adding up right. And so I think overall, I agree with Boova. If you don't want to write the note, don't write. No one wants to read your passive aggressive note
anyway.
Exactly
right. Yes.
So you should probably just keep the note to yourself. But, like, if you think that you're doing your kid any favors by not, like, looking at the reality of the situation, all you're doing is setting him up to be hit by another car.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you're
the car of life.
You're not doing your kid any favors by acting like, you know, he's impervious to consequences.
Yeah.
Like, put the same situation back 20 years ago. Be like, you shouldn't have been in traffic, Todd. You're out of bike, dude. You're lucky that woman, like, I was not going to buy you another one. You rode out in front of a car. No bikes.
Yeah.
All right. Secular's advice. Secular says
nothing.
The question was, let's see. My question is, do I have to write that thank you note? If so, can you give me some words? Secular, I can think of a few choice words, but no rule of etiquette demands you thank the woman for the bicycle that was destroyed because of her inattentiveness. Done.
Full stop.
Full stop. You know what happens when people are distracted? They say they were on their phone. Like, they have a real specific example of how they were distracted. They don't just go, yeah, she admitted to being distracted. I was distracted because there's a kid in the bike in the middle of the road. And then I slammed on my brakes. I feel like now I'm 100% sure that I'm right about this. This kid is to blame for
now
sure.
Now that I've heard from Secular, you know what? I am right.
Yeah, I'm 100% right. This kid is the cause of the accident, and I think his mom's trying to cover it up.
I should. You know what? Realistically, I would have the kid write the note.
Oh, there you go.
I would keep the mom out of it. And she needs to do it therapeutically, but she's not going to do it. But I would say let the kid do it, because the kid seems to actually be thankful about it.
Right.
And
I got a bike of a new color. This is awesome.
Yeah.
That's so nice of you.
And it shows.
Green's,
like,
way better than red anyway.
It probably gives the person who hit him a chance to, like, she'll probably respond.
Yes.
And it shows a kid how to work out a problem, regardless of whether the kid was at fault or the person was at fault. It's probably both in some regards. But, like, this
mostly
is how people
the kid,
do it.
Though, you think?
Yeah, probably mostly
yeah,
the
sounds
kid.
Right.
In Mike's terrible. World, the person who hit the kid should write a letter to the kid going, why were you in traffic? You distracted me, Timmy. You suck.
That's what John Wayne would do.
I got you a Schwinn from Walmart.
Made me spill my coffee, and I didn't tell you about that.
Yeah.
Burn my leg.
I would have the kid do it. And then, yeah, because the kid probably would.
But I tell you what, man, if several years ago, 10, 15 years ago, right in front of our building here, some kid went out in middle school, drove his bike out in the traffic, got hit and died. And there's a bench out there now with his name on it. And once a year, they bring flowers out there. And
wow.
It's like, was it the kid's fault? Yeah, probably. Was it the driver's fault? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's
driving on a road.
It's both. Both have to do their job, and both didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know? Called an accident.
Yeah. Okay. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. You're listening live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us this week. Let's do this. Let's finish off the night with the musical stylings of Dirk Von Steen, of Not Buva, for sure.
Oh.
That boom, that beatbox thing that you suggested has put me off to any suggestion that you might perform.
So good. I started a band in the last 20 minutes called The Right Two, and it's just me. All right.
I now, unfortunately, Dirk laughed at that. Now I question his judgment. He's a good songwriter, but I mean, don't take him to play the lotto or anything.
Well, this is my first podcast, so I'm learning that it's all live. You don't know what to expect.
Hey, I'll tell you this. We've been doing it for, it's been 13 years?
13 or 14,
almost 14 years. And I think you've done a great job. Like,
oh, absolutely.
We've not improved. And so I bet two or three more rinks, Dirk, you could take the place over. I would think about it.
Matter of fact, please do.
Yeah.
Hey, come on out.
Did you guys see that the real Millie Vanilli's going to cut an album?
The real Millie?
Yeah.
No, like the dudes.
Yeah, the Ugmos.
They're not dead?
The Ugmos.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Oh, the real Millie Vanilli.
That's
okay,
what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. Sorry, I was missing the point.
No, the actual Millie Vanilli, not the handsome versions.
Huh, all right.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Just to clarify.
The ones who were actually recorded.
The voices or the bodies?
Yeah.
The voices.
Yeah, the voices.
The real.
The voices already cut an album. They were the original album. The bodies are the
you're
guys
saying
who
they have a follow up album after all the
crap. I didn't think about that. Anyway,
the fake Millie Vanillis.
Okay, what you're saying is we could be the new cover band.
We could possibly be the new Millie Vanillis.
Yeah, we could be the new. We could
let's
be the
start
new
a band called Millie the real Millie Vanillis.
Put on some moves now.
I get to work that's way that. Better than the right two. You guys are right. This is great.
Blame it on the rain again.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for having me on. This has been it's been fun. It's been fun. I'm gonna 5:30 tomorrow morning. It's gonna come a little quick.
But it does. It sure does.
It really does. The last song I'm gonna leave everybody with is the first song that I wrote when I sobered up, and I started writing the song immediately, like within a month after I first sobered up. It took me a few years to really kind of finalize it, and I had a good friend Josh Dom, at worship leader at Grimes United Methodist Church, Prairie Creek, that kind of helped to hone my picking skills, I guess, a lot on this one, and that was a very big influence. The song is called Feel Again. This is really raw emotions and what it's like in early days of recovery. Opening line, got to breathe out to breathe in, and this is all about accepting that there is a higher power in my life. And at this time when I wrote the song, I had no idea it was Jesus, but I was ready and willing to change.
Right on.
And that's what it's about. So it's called To Feel Again.
Got to breathe out to breathe in, to stand and walk away. Find the courage to look back and pull the words to say. Anger, fear, and resentment just get in the way. Searching deep within myself to shine the light today. Got to get down on my knees, please show the way. Show the hand of the lost soul. Give me strength to stay. Getting out of my head to lend my mind.